Yes. Well, now we're going to introduce our speaker. But first, I want to say your singing was wonderful. And clap for yourselves. And you picked new songs. It wasn't the same of songs. And that was really fun.
Except for that little flyer kite.
Some the same. Now, our speaker has moved back from Flagstaff to San Diego, and we're pleased that she is back here. And the one thing neat about Diana Gribble is that she amazes me. She has met challenges in her life, and she always picks the optimum with the challenge. I don't do that, I hate to say. I wish I did. But she does. She sees how it can work out to the optimum. And I just cheer for her all the time because she is so positive. So, do you want to add something?
Oh, yeah, I've known Diana. You've been in Tuesday night class forever with me.
Right.
Way,
94 is when I started here.
Yeah. Way back when. I mean, we used to have Millie's classes here. She had circles here Tuesdays. Used to be Tuesday day, Tuesday night, Thursday night, Friday, all that
and
stuff.
Monday.
And Monday. So we would be in Tuesday class. And then this is when we would have our breaks upstairs. And I remember Donna, I'm an entrepreneur, and Diana's an entrepreneur, and she would like get all excited about all these great ideas that she'd have and just run them by me. Da, da. And I remember one time you were a clown, right? And then you were teaching kids, and you worked for me teaching kids art lessons for a while too, and gave me some great ideas. Hey, Penny, this stuff needs to be in alphabetical order. You know, I mean, it's like she's brilliant. She's got a fun little dog, too. So,
yeah,
we're going to let her talk.
My dog's in love with her dog.
Yeah, they are. Sammy loves Scooter.
Yeah.
Sammy is awesome. He's a stud muffin, I'm telling you. My little Scooter, she's 4 years old. Yeah, she loves him. She doesn't love any dogs like she loves him. She chases him. No, she doesn't ever chase dogs. They chase her. She chases him.
And that is really funny to see.
It's hilarious. They just,
yeah.
Okay, so with that note, we're going to let her take the speaker, and we're going to sit down and listen to Diana Gribble. Welcome her.
Oh,
we're
going to thank you. Thank you very much. So, I don't think I need a speaker. That's for sure. But, well, thank you. Thank you guys for coming, and I'm just really excited to have this opportunity to be able to share a little bit of my life, I guess. You know, I was raised kind of like as a victim. I was a victim of my life, the circumstances of my life. And it was poor me, poor me, poor me, poor me. And I didn't realize until, I have to tell you, I was almost 40 years old by the time I started coming here and getting that I could love myself and I could, you know, be a stand for myself. And so the thing I want to kind of talk about tonight is about unhealthy attachment versus surrender. So I've noticed in my lifetime that the when I started coming here in 2004, you know, it's like this little onion that's all in this package deal, and it takes a lot to get that layer down, that layer down, that layer. Because I had protected myself so much because of the victim that I was and that lack of trust. So I created all these layers of protection, self-protection, and which I thought was a good thing. But unfortunately, what it did was it excluded a lot of people in my life because that I didn't have to be responsible for the relationship. And so so I found... So my mother and I had a very... I was raised with six brothers and sisters, father, mother. They were married for 13 years. He was extremely abusive. She was not kind. I don't remember her saying I love you until I was 16 years old. And I actually literally sat on her lap to make her say it because she just couldn't do it. That's just not who she was. It wasn't in her makeup. But, of course, I didn't realize that when I was a kid, all I wanted was love and affection. And none of us kids got it because we were literally in survival mode the whole time growing up. When's the next time? When's the next time? When's the next time? When's the next time? So it was one of those things where fear played a huge thing in my life. So when I created these walls, it was really all about protecting myself. Well, so with the relationship with my mother, in 1992, I decided that I was no longer going to put up with it. And I wrote her a letter and said, you know what? You might be my mother, but you're not my mom. Because you have no idea what it takes to be a mom. Da-da-da-da-da. You know, and I really ranted on her. And I didn't talk to her for like 6 years. And then finally, some friends said, you know, you really need to talk to your mom. And I said, why? I said, you know, I have all the proof and the evidence to show that there's no reason why I should talk to her. And they're like, you really need to get this cleared up. And I said, okay, fine. So I called her and said, hello? And she's like, oh, I've been waiting for this call. And I went, oh, okay, well, I just want to tell you, thank you for not throwing me in the dumpster. Bye. And hung up. That was our relationship. I mean, you know, like I did the minimal that I needed to do. However, you know, what I come to realize through this process of, it was Landmark Education at the end of the 1998, whatever. And that's when I finally got back together with her because in 1992 I stopped and then in 1998 I got back into the relationship with her. And I realized, of course, that, you know, she did the very best she could. And I knew that from the very beginning. I knew she did the best she could. However, you know, that doesn't make my life any easier. And then us kids weren't shown how to love each other. So there's all this separation between us seven kids. So nobody even knows each other at all because there's no trust enough to be able to get to know each other. Anyways, nonetheless, so then I called her after another course I was doing. I called her and said, you know, I want to apologize for the way I've been being a daughter because it's not only on you, it's on me too. Like I was not being very nice. And and she said, oh, I understand. And so we talked and we had a mutual understanding. And I, you know, in the 30 years that I was living here, she called me one time and I always extended the phone. You know, and because that's just what your daughter is supposed to do, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, so I want to talk about the reason why I'm talking about that is because I was attached to a certain outcome. I was attached to what my mother was supposed to be for me or be for anyone. She was a loving sister to her brothers and sisters, and you could see it everywhere. But she was not that way with us kids. And it was so, so very sad. But it was me. I took on the responsibility, which it is my responsibility, to know that I was attached to the outcome. I thought she had supposed to be loving and supportive and kind and fair and yada, yada, yada. She was none of that. She was none of that for me. So I just had to accept her as she was. So that was not a very healthy attachment. We all have attachments of different kinds. There's the healthy kind and the unhealthy. And I want to kind of bring forward the unhealthy stuff because a lot of times we don't talk about the unhealthy. We talk about this stuff that, oh, this works and that works and this works and that works. But the unhealthy stuff is the things that, let me look at this for just a second. So, is when we are willing to abandon our own work or interest to dedicate ourselves to solving other people's problems. It feels awkward to leave them to sort out their own issues. It might feel like we're being supportive, but actually a little disrespectful. So if you have a friend in your life or if you have a coworker, somebody that you don't get along with, that there's that just that little kind of a little thing in the side, you know, going, that person, that person. So there's a unhealthy attachment to that, as well as so many other things like our own ideas, our own ways of doing things. They have to be a certain way. If they're a certain way, then that's how they work, and they're not going to work any other way other than that. And that's what happens when, as we get older, we're set in our certain ways, and we think that that is the way it should be. We get attached to things, to places, things. I mean, you know, I'm going through this whole thing about trying to, I just moved back. So September 23rd, I got my apartment. I got all my stuff out of storage on the last couple of few days. And so I'm sorting through stuff and going, this place is way too small to have all this stuff. And I had purged a lot of stuff when I left. However, it's a continual process, because if you go into your closet and you go, wow, where'd that come from? Where did that come from? Or drawers full of stuff, and stuff and stuff and stuff and stuff. You know, it's like, whoa, you know, no wonder we get buried, really emotionally, physically, everything buried around us. It's the minute that you start getting rid of stuff, you open yourself up to way more possibilities. So it's also people present in our lives. You know, we get so attached to the outcome, like the brother-in-law or the sister or the mother or the niece or the nephew. They should do this. They should do that. You know, that's just not the way to be. You can't be. So it's like, for me, I believe it's kind of like an addiction. And there's all levels of addiction, as we all know. There's not just one addiction that, oh, somebody's an alcoholic. You know, they started drinking to get rid of the pain of doing whatever it is that they think they're supposed to be doing. And then it just becomes this snowball. It keeps going and going and get bigger and bigger and bigger. And then finally, it's when the person has to crash before they finally do something about it. So saying to ourselves that this has to happen this way is an unhealthy attachment. The one question that I always ask myself is, how is this working in my life? No matter what kind of an attachment it is, it doesn't matter if it's an attachment to something as simple as a color. Oh, I don't know about that. But anyways, you know attachments. They're big and they're small. They're, like I said, positive and negative. So I'd like to just go ahead and do like a little bit of a meditation. If we could, sit up in your chair and put your feet on the ground and close your eyes and just kind of ground yourself, you know, like your feet are going down into the earth like a tree, that the roots are going down. And then just to imagine like an incident or a relationship or a situation of an unhealthy attachment. We all have them. And like I said, of different levels, different kinds. Some are really bad, some not, you know, pretty simple. But bring something to your mind that for you, that this is your sacred place that only you know, and go to connect with spirit. Bring in a single light through the crown chakra as you see this issue vividly, vividly looking at it. This specific issue, no matter how little, how big, and how much you would like to have that no longer in your life because it's not working for you anymore. It's not for your highest good. And then just sit there and be with that just for a little bit. And the more intensely that you bring it up, the more you're able to let it go. So that now we could just say, hey, I surrender this to spirit. Just surrender it. Let it go, release, let it go, and let God. And come back into the room. Feel yourself, your feet, your chair. There's a couple other things that I want.
I got all kinds of time, huh?
Yep.
Oh. Okay. Anyway, so let me see. What was it going to... So I love, when I go on to Facebook, I love all the positive photos that are on there. And last time I shared, about a month ago, you know, some of those different things that are, I don't know, inspiring me. They inspire me. But this year is, I'm going to share this. It's, you know, once I asked a very successful woman to share her secret with me, she smiled and said to me, "I started succeeding when I started leaving small fights to small fighters. I stopped fighting those who gossiped about me. I stopped fighting with my in-laws. I stopped fighting for attention. I stopped fighting to meet people's expectations of me. I stopped fighting to please everyone. I stopped fighting to prove they were wrong about me. I left such fights for those who have nothing else to fight. And I started fighting for my vision, for my dreams, for my ideas, and for my destiny. The day I gave up the small fights is the day I started becoming successful and so much more content. Some fights are not worth your time. So when you ask the question, is this working? You know, we do a lot of things that don't work in our lives. And one of the things you could do is start trying to surrender some of this stuff. Surrender over to your higher power. And I've just found surrendering, I'll mention that in just a second, but choose what you want to fight for wisely. So in 2004, I started smoking at the age of 11. And I smoked up until the age of 50. So it was like 39 years I had been smoking, and I had tried over and over and over. I was hypnotized. I quit for a year and 7 months. I went, something traumatic happened, and I went back to it because that's just what I did. And then the last 3 years, I tried to quit smoking. It was just every 2 weeks, every month and a half. Every time I turned around for 2.5-3 years, constant, I had to have tried to quit 120 times. It was really, really sickening. It really was. However, you know, my mother was able to quit like this. And of course, every time I talked to her, she's like, "Hey, I just quit to cold turkey." And I'm like, "Oh, that's great. Awesome." I said, "You know," she goes, "you just don't want to bad enough." I said, "Well, I disagree." You know, and so we went on our way or whatever. And I finally realized that I needed help. And as I had been hypnotized one time, I tried it again and it didn't work. But I decided to go to Nicotine Anonymous. And there were 3 meetings here in San Diego. This was in 2004. And I had gone to Alcoholics Anonymous to see if the program would work for me. And it's like, nah, that's not going to work for me. So it was in 2004 is when I went to the Nicotine Anonymous meeting out in El Cajon. And, you know, initially, I didn't think of, well, you know, everybody sits there and shares, you know, what they went through and what they're going through and the feelings and the this and the that. And then I finally said, so I thought, well, okay, I'll go ahead and try this. So I quit for, I think, 3 days, and then I went back to smoking. And I just wanted to see if they were going to really, you know, support me like they say that they support you. And they did. And I was pretty well astonished that I had people that really cared about my smobriety, is what we call it. And so there was a person there that smoked 3 packs a day. It's like you don't have any time to do anything else other than smoke all day long. And she had them hidden in her garage, under the hood of her car, all these different places. And that's what addiction is that it is like ripping, you know, thing, your face away. It's like, come on, I need my cigarette. I need my cigarette. I need my cigarette. Well, so I got a sponsor, a lady, and we decided to go ahead and start doing the step program. And I did the first step, and that's pretty much admitting that your life has become unmanageable around smoking. It had been unmanageable for many, many, many years. And so that was a hard one, though, to get because, you know, I'm a strong, independent woman. Nobody's going to tell me, you know. So it was really, really hard. And so finally, the second, it was actually the second step is knowing that if you gave it over to God, that you could give it over. And then the third one is what finally got me, and that was the surrender part. That was the surrender part. So I was able to and finally decided that I was going to do something that I hadn't done before, and that was like get on my knees and pray. You know, so I prayed in the morning, please just give me this day. Just give me this day. That's all I want. Right by my bed when I was a kid, and at night, I didn't have any cigarettes. I'd go back and get on my knees. Thank you for this day. Next morning, for about a week and a half, 2 weeks. And then it just, I don't know, it just melted away. It was the surrendering. So that's why I'm talking about now is the surrender is so very important, or at least it has been in my life. So I just wanted to share that with you. So I have a copy of the little thing that I made. You know, I asked a successful woman, if you want a copy of it, you're welcome to have one. And I think that's all I have.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Here, I'll leave that there. Thank you.